The scripture text for today that Brennan read just a few minutes ago is one that we love so much. It's from the third chapter of 1 Samuel. And by the way, I noticed when Sarah opened the Bible, she opened the 1 Samuel and she did not even know that that was going to be the sermon for the day. Must be something to that. But it's a story we love, don't we? And children love this story. It's delightful. It's heartwarming. It's the story of a little boy who can't sleep at night. He hears a voice and he assumes it's Eli, and so he runs in and, "I heard you calling." And old Eli said, "Nope, wasn't me. Go back to bed." Happens a second time. It happens a third time. And then the old priest finally realizes that, wait a minute, something's going on here. And he tells Samuel, "When you hear the voice again, you simply say, 'Lord, speak. Speak, Lord, for your servant hears. Your servant is listening.'" We love that story. And children love that story, and they should love the story. You know why we love it? Because we all imagine ourselves as being Samuel. But the truth is, most of us here today, we're not Samuel. We're Eli. Now, these little children who came down here a few minutes ago, they're Samuel. The young people who have gone to Passport, they are Samuel, and they will hear God speaking to them this week. But sadly, most of us, we're not Samuel, we're Eli. We're the ones who tell the children who say, "I heard a voice. Go back to bed, kid. Don't bother me. I'm sleeping." You see, when we read this story from the perspective of Eli, it becomes a harsh, convicting, and painful story to hear. Perhaps the one thing that Brennan read in those opening words of the third chapter that should stab us in the heart is simply this: the word of the Lord was rare in those days. God wasn't speaking anymore. This is a story about hearing, about listening to the voice of God and to the voice of others. You have to go back to the first chapter. You know, one of the greatest stories in the Old Testament is the story of Hannah, who is praying that God would bless her with a son. It is a story of a mother who prays, a God who hears, but a priest who does not understand. You remember what Eli said to Hannah when she's praying? He said, "What's wrong with you, woman? You drunk? You need to go settle down." You see, he didn't understand. And then we go into the second chapter, and we discover that Eli has two sons who are described by the biblical writer as worthless men. I mean, two guys that, oh my soul, you want to read about worthless men? Read the second chapter. They were involved in all type of immorality. They were embezzling. They were just doing all kind of terrible things. We have a priest who does not listen when people say something is wrong. And when he does mention this to his sons, they do not listen. And then we get into the third chapter, and we find a God who does not speak, a priest who does not hear, but a little boy who is the only one who listens. Let me tell you a story that plays into our understanding of this. It goes back centuries ago to the Ethiopian Desert Fathers, the Coptic Christians. There was a wise sage A man who was known for his wisdom. People would come to him seeking advice and words of wisdom and guidance in their life. And so these men travel on this pilgrimage, and they finally come to the place where the wise old sage resides. And they said, "Father, speak to us. We have come seeking words of advice and guidance and wisdom and knowledge." But the old sage was silent. He didn't say a word. They begged him, "Speak to us." They pleaded with him, but he was silent. And finally, he said to them, "There are no more words." And they said, "What can you mean, there are no more words? You've always had words to share, divine words, powerful words, dynamic words, helpful words." And this is what he said: "There are no more words to share, because when you hear the words of wisdom, you do not listen. You do not respond. You do not follow." Is it any wonder that the word of the Lord was rare in those days? And do you notice the symbolism of the old priest who is losing his sight? This old priest who no longer has any visions because he cannot see. And there's the young boy, Samuel. How quickly we go from being Samuel, when we hear the voice of God, when we believe that God is speaking to us, when our young people go to Passport, when they go to Belize, when they go on a retreat and they come back and they say, "God has spoken to us," and we say to them, "Quiet, don't bother me. We don't want you to upset the apple cart. We don't want you to change anything around here." Are we guilty? Are we guilty of being Eli and squelching the enthusiasm and the very voice of God that our young people hear? Many of you know the name of Will Willimon, who for many years was the chaplain at Duke University at the Divinity School, and he was the dean of the chapel at Duke. Willimon said, this is his theory about church design. He said, "There is a reason that we pad the pews, although you notice we don't, that we bolt the furniture to the ground, you notice we do. There's a reason that we print up the service in the bulletin, which we do, and then we carefully, deliberately plod through the prescribed acts of worship." He said, "The reason is we are afraid. We are fearful that God just might speak and He may lead us to do something that we've never done before, that we're not comfortable in doing." There is a reason, he said. We are so predictable, so settled, and so fixed. We have become Eli. We know that this church can be a risky and a dangerous place with the living God roaming around. And maybe it's best just to keep Him under control. Some of you know the story about how the Baptist Children's Homes of North Carolina got started. It's a pretty amazing story. I've lost my watch. You're in trouble now. Maybe that's a sign. John Haynes Mills was a big man. I was telling Karen, I used to do monologues, but I wasn't big enough. I had to pad myself when I did John Haynes Mills. He was a big man physically, but he had a bigger heart. And he was a man who back in the 1880s, he saw a tremendous need to start an orphanage. I was talking to somebody this week about the devastating effects of the Civil War, that it took generations for the South to recover. And part of that devastation was families were torn apart, and there were so many children who were orphans, not just immediately after the war, but for decades to come, because of the devastation, the lack of health care, and a lot of other factors. John Haynes Mills believed that the Baptist of North Carolina needed to be in the business of helping these children, providing what we're doing today, and he went all around the state. And people listened to him, and they responded to him, and so he went to the Baptist State Convention in 1884. It was held in Raleigh. And it was everything was set. You know, you have to go through the formalities. You have to get everybody to sign off on it and approve it. But little did he know he was walking into a hornet's nest. He walked into the Baptist State Convention, and there was so much opposition. And they said the politics that went on and all of that would make you ashamed. The bottom line was, it was not approved. In fact, it wasn't even voted on. They used a lot of parliamentary tricks to dismiss the convention. John Haynes Mills, that big, big man with the bigger heart, was devastated. He walked out of the church, First Baptist Church of Raleigh. He found some steps on the side of the church, and he sat down, and that big old man had big tears running down his face. The president of Wake Forest College, Dr. Taylor, walked by on his way to the train station to go back to the Forest of Wake. That was actually when Wake Forest College was in Wake Forest. Imagine that. He was on his way to the train station, and he sees this big old man crying. He stopped and talked to him. He knew who he was. Together, they went back in the church, went into the pastor's office, and the president of Wake Forest College put some money on the table, and some other men put some money on the table, just a few dollars. That's how the Baptist Children's Homes got started. Just because it wasn't voted on by the convention, that doesn't stop the voice of God. You see, the convention was being Eli. The convention said, don't bother us with those children. If we think God is silent, maybe we need to listen to the children. A number of years ago, and this was when this little girl is now going to college, so it'll tell you how long ago it was. Every December in Advent, we have a beautiful nativity set that's out here in the vestibule. You all have seen it. It's provided by Don and Jane Swing. It is absolutely gorgeous. One Sunday in December, everybody was walking out of church and the vestibule and greeting one another, and this little girl, who was only 4 or 5, broke away from her family, and when they turned around, they saw her at the nativity picking up the baby Jesus. And the mother and the grandmother said, oh, stop! Don't touch that! It's fragile. It will break. And everybody in the vestibule went, oh! And you know what she said? She said, I just wanted to kiss the baby Jesus. And she did. And gently put him back in the manger. We love our children. We love our young people. When they hear the voice of God, let's encourage them. Let's listen to them. Let's not be afraid, but let's give them every opportunity to allow God's will to be worked out in their lives and ours. Thanks be to God for the children.